Hello and welcome back to the GGB Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 19th year. As always, I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and I'm so pleased to be joined today by Mark Pace, president of the International Gaming Standards Association, to talk about the organization's latest developments, including its upcoming technical summit on future technologies. It may not seem like it on the surface, but technology standards have played a pivotal role in the expansion of gaming as we know it. Perhaps no organization has worked harder to unite engineers, industry leaders, regulators, and politicians than the International Gaming Standards Association, headed by President Mark Pace. Pace has been with the IGSA since its earliest days and is primed to lead the group across the world and across the industry. He and I spoke via Zoom in August.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for joining me again. I believe it is kind of later on in Wednesday evening as we talk, and it's the morning for me. It's one of those, I always like to say whenever I do one of these international interviews, it's the wonders of modern technology, which we will discuss, obviously, in this interview. But just the fact that we are holding this interview, I guess, is a testament to technology, which is the theme of today. So how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you very much. And how are you?
Not bad, not bad. It's like I said, it's the beginning of the day for me. So you've already lived, you know, my whole day. So I've got to catch up with you throughout the rest of today, and hopefully.
If you're interested in understanding what the future holds, please let me know, and I will share with you later.
I was gonna say, yeah, give me all of your numbers and all your other predictions and everything else. So, for anyone who is not aware, you are the president of the International Gaming Standards Association, which has become one of my favorite kind of groups in the industry. We've worked with you guys several times before, and I always like hearing from you guys because I just think it's an interesting part of the industry. And also, I've just also always been fascinated by kind of your guys' origin story and kind of how things like just kind of started from nowhere. And now it's grown to be this literal worldwide organization. It's just very interesting to me. So I kind of wanted to start there. I mean, obviously, you know, I remember when I did the interview with you and Peter a little while ago, you guys kind of gave me the backstory. But for anybody who might have missed that or might not be familiar with the IGSA, kind of could you give a little background as to, like, you know, how, you know, I know you've been in the industry for a very long time, but kind of a general synopsis and kind of how you got involved with IGSA and now became the president of the organization.
Sure, I'll try to keep it brief. IGSA has been around now for 26 plus years. We started really because a gentleman who is quite well known in the industry, Mr. John Akers, penned a letter to the industry basically saying, we have so many different interoperability issues, and this was in the day of slot machines talking to casino management systems. They said it was really untenable that we continue to operate in this way, and should we not get together and really identify a standard for how this very basic plumbing, this communication between gaming devices and systems occurs. And at the time, I think there were over 20 some different proprietary communication protocols. And I was working at Harris Entertainment, responsible for slot technology. And you know, we had our own lab because we had to test products in the lab before we put them on the casino floor, because quite frankly, vendor A would say, yes, we are compliant. Vendor B says we compliant. We plug them together and stuff doesn't work. And we can't do that on the casino floor, ruining customers' experiences. So that was the genesis of what was then known as the Gaming Machine Manufacturers Association, or GAMMA. It sort of evolved from gaming machine manufacturers to also include operators whose voice was very much needed. They were the consumers. And then from there, after a number of years, we renamed the group to the International Gaming Standards Association in recognition of the fact that we now had offices in Macau, we had offices in Europe, an office in Japan, and last year we announced the opening of an office in Nigeria, in Lagos. Huge, you know, huge expansion, lots of different work going on, and for those of you who aren't familiar with us, really what we do is we're the only nonprofit trade association in the gaming industry that focuses on standards and best practices around technology and around operational issues. We really don't get involved in policy unless we need to have a conversation with policymakers because certain language might impact technology that may or may not be allowed because of words that are being chosen. Other than that, we're the only ones working on technology. So that's it in about a minute.
Well, it's funny. I remember when you guys were first telling me kind of about that history, and I think it just kind of speaks to just the evolution of the industry when you think about how almost 30 years ago, getting these people all into a room and kind of coinciding with each other and cooperating with each other. I don't know if it seemed, if it feels, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it feels kind of like it wouldn't happen today, but these companies, have grown, the industry has grown to become a multi-billion dollar industry, and these companies have done nothing but, grow and influence, and obviously in performance. So it's just fascinating to me, the idea of getting them all to kind of work harmoniously for a greater cause, especially when you talk about it on a worldwide scale as well. So that's always been interesting to me, and it's also kind of similar to that. Like, it's been fascinating to kind of follow the trajectory of the organization as well, like alongside the industry. Like, I remember you guys telling me how you guys were involved with kind of the development of Class 2 gaming, or kind of the how you were involved in that, and then also with the kind of the onset of iGaming in the US. I remember you guys telling me about that as well, obviously in Macau. Japan, et cetera, Africa, which I want to touch on later. So it's kind of interesting to kind of chart those two lines next to each other and see how, you guys have kind of grown and evolved alongside the industry. And it kind of, I think, paints a picture of how things have gone in that time.
And I think if you were to go back historically and look at who our members were and the number of IGSA members, you'll see that it ebbed and flowed, especially as the industry went through significant M&A activity where we would have two, three members that all of a sudden became one because of the merger and acquisitions that were going on. I think what's really interesting, however, is that when we started, we were talking about very low-level technology protocols. By and large, those issues, for good or bad, have been addressed. What we're getting now, and the cooperation that we're getting now, and the members that we have today, and we have in our membership, some of those very, very big multi-billion-dollar international corporations. We are working on issues that have changed. They're not little bit and byte level protocol issues anymore. Now they're broader issues, they're bigger issues. And I'll touch on this, as we go through this conversation today. But what we're doing with artificial intelligence and our work with regulators, what we're doing with cyber resiliency, especially in light of the now infamous hacks that have occurred, up and down the strip and to, unfortunately, the Nevada Gaming Control Board, and not to mention, other hacks across the world. What we're doing with payments, what we're doing with responsible gaming, these are not so much, communication things. They're technology. It's the application of new technologies in the furtherance of gaming, and how can we do things more efficiently, more effectively? How can we take advantage of new innovations in technology? And how can we help regulators understand them and then be in a position to allow them and, of course, to monitor and provide oversight, which is a hugely important and extremely difficult role, especially, as we said earlier, given the volume and the velocity of technology today. I mean, it's crazy.
And you just said it, and I think the interesting part is the education, I guess, part of it in terms of the regulators is, like, this technology moves fast. It's very difficult to understand for most people, and I think that it might be, for some people, they might say, like, well, wouldn't a regulator, know every single thing about every single thing? And it's like, not entirely. And I think that's part of why, organizations such as you guys are so important for that reason, that kind of bolster the general knowledge about these things, because they are pretty complicated.
Well, we try to partner with regulators, and it's interesting because within IGSA and within the committees that we have, there are many ex-regulators. So it's great having those individuals who have lived that life and understand how difficult it is. Most regulatory authorities are understaffed. They don't have the budgets, they don't have the time, they're being outgunned and outmaneuvered by all of the technology that's being implemented by companies who are for profit. And these regulators are trying to deal with it. It's very difficult. So what we try and do is we try and say, look, here's how to think about this new technology. So I'm going to give you an example. We have an ethical AI committee. The Ethical AI Committee is creating best practices specifically for regulators so that they can sort of, tune out all of the noise around AI and focus on a set of things that they ought to require of suppliers and operators around AI. I know I hear around the world, you've got people in politics that want to ban this, ban that. They want to ban AI. They want to ban, distributed ledger, blockchain technology. It's like you can't ban technology. What you can do is you can put together a set of guardrails and a set of rules on how that technology can be used. So what we're doing with ethical AI is we're doing just that. We're creating best practices, focusing on algorithms and most importantly, the data that algorithms are going to use. I spoke at the NAGRA conference in Charleston a few months back, and a lot of regulators are sort of, just frustrated at trying to figure out how to understand AI from a technology perspective. My message to them is forget learning about algorithms and the mathematics and all the stuff that goes into that piece of AI. Focus on the data. Focus on what data is going to be permitted to be used by AI algorithms. Focus about the completeness and the accuracy of the data. Focus on making sure the data doesn't have inherent bias into it. Because once you've got AI algorithms that are consuming this data, and especially when you've got generative AI, if you feed it garbage, its decisions are going to be garbage. The old garbage in, garbage out, sort of saying is now even more important. And the other thing that I tell regulators is, think about AI algorithm. Think about what it's called. It's called big data, right? So lots of data has to be fed to these algorithms for them to learn. Just focus on that. What is the quality of this data and what data is appropriate to be fed to these algorithms? Once you do that, and once you implement, some oversight, some auditability, some transparency when things go awry, because, it's code, and ultimately, humans are writing this code, and things will happen. Nothing's perfect, right? So as long as there's some transparency requirements where people are notified, and as long as there's some audit requirements where these things are being looked at, as long as there is a written down reason for this algorithm and an expectation of what its outcome should be, as long as you've got some of these things in place, and I'm paraphrasing a lot of the best practices that we have, now all of a sudden you don't have to focus on learning how to write AI algorithms and how they're coded. Now you're focusing on, oh, okay, well, what data do we generate in gaming? What data is going to be used? Is the data appropriate to be used with algorithms? Is the data complete? And what is it that I expect from my operators and suppliers in terms of transparency and auditability? And now it becomes just like any other technology.
Definitely. And it's there for anybody who's familiar with the industry, who knows Richard Schutz, he likes to use a quote from Sherlock Holmes, which is data, data, data. I can't make bricks without clay. And so I always keep that in mind whenever we talk about these things, because as you just alluded to it, that's kind of the heart of the issue. So You guys recently, I don't want to say recently, but the beginning of the year, I believe it was February, you guys announced kind of a change in leadership, obviously the departure of former President Peter Durate. You have since taken over as president. I believe did Earl Hall leave as chairman at the same time? Was Nimish named as chairman at the same time?
So every year we have a new board of directors
Okay.
election,
Okay.
and so at the end of 2023, AXIS decided not to renew their membership for their own reasons, and so Earl had to step down as chair. Nimish was vice chair of the board at the time. We had an election. He put his hat into the ring for becoming chair, and he was voted in. So that was that piece. And after 25 years of blood, sweat, and tears that Peter put into growing this organization literally from nothing to what it is today, I don't begrudge the man taking a step back and saying, you know what, I'm now going to work sort of out of the wings. He's still part of IGSA. He's still providing valuable information, support, continuity. He and I talk at least 4 times a week, if not more, on things that are going on. He's got a lot of history, knows so many people, has gone through so many different experiences that, I had no expectations of trying to fill his shoes. What I was trying to do is, as I was vice president along with Peter, I knew what direction we were trying to take the organization. I basically am continuing with trying to take the organization in that direction with his support sort of in the background. So that's how that came about. One of the things that we really wanted to do was focus more on working with regulators, and really understanding their issues, because their issues become operator and supplier issues. Especially as we started looking at the expansion of sports in the US, we're seeing, online starting to slowly gain some traction. We see what's happened in Europe. We understand some of the pain points that European regulators have had related to data, because there's so much data that comes at them, and it's so different between sports and online casino and land-based casino and lottery. And some of these regulators are now being asked to provide oversight for all of those different, gaming verticals. It's very, very challenging. So we're continuing down the path. We're also trying to expand, and we're trying to look at new areas, again, related to technology. So I'll touch on this. One of the things that, as I've gone around talking to the different companies, one of the things that was raised as a big issue is one related to payments. Everybody wants to do cashless. Everybody says cashless this, cashless that. And then when you ask, what does cashless mean? If you've got five experts in the room, you get five different definitions of what cashless is, depending on their perspective. And we all know that, online, any online activity just cannot function without some sort of a payment processing process. And we know that for sports betting, accommodations have been made relative to merchant codes to allow the use of, cards in terms of funding players' wallets. But coming out of COVID, and everybody was talking about cashless, and how cashless was going to be the next huge thing in land-based, and of course, as online casino starts to expand, well, we need it there as well. Can't work without, cashless. There's still lots of missing pieces. And one of the things that IGSA has done is we've stepped in and said, hey, we're the standard setting body for the industry. This sounds like there needs to be some standards that are very much aligned to things that are required from a FinCEN perspective. Obviously, banks, credit card networks, credit card companies are involved in this area. So how do we bring these traditionally non-gaming companies to work with traditionally gaming companies that are doing payments. And how do we identify areas that we could work on to try and really allow, through standards, payments and cashless to become a workable, real solution for both land-based and getting ready for online casino? We're doing that. We're starting to do that. We're going to have a meeting on the 25th of September. I'm not going to go through all the different companies that we're inviting to that meeting, but it is half non-gaming and half gaming, because you need everybody together sitting at a table to discuss, the issues and how we can realistically and pragmatically, come up with standards to solve those issues. And we're not going to try and boil the ocean. My goal in this meeting is to, identify one. I'll be happy with one. It'd be great if we had two, but I'd be happy with one item that could really make a fundamental difference in enabling real cashless in the gaming industry. One that would, have a really good player experience. And one that could benefit operators and suppliers.
You
So
know,
that's something that came out of a long-term look at how do we go into non-traditional gaming areas, again, continuing to focus on technology.
I think that's it's fascinating, and it's funny when I first came on to this role in early 2022, cashless was like one of the biggest kind of themes or stories at the time. We had a lot of clients at the time who were cashless companies, and I remember just like starting out kind of doing those stories and talking to those companies and kind of just being like overwhelmed with like all the payment side of things. I mean, it was hard enough for me to understand gaming at that time, let alone payments and finances and things like that. So it was like really hard kind of to slog through the terminology and things like that. And it's interesting how over time, over the years, as I've talked, done more of these stories and talked with more of these companies, like I feel like I have a better understanding of it, but overall the development of it or the progress of it probably hasn't, gone as much as I maybe would have thought at the time, when I first started. So I think that's really interesting and very timely because it just seems like one of those things across the industry where you talk to people about it, whether they're in the payment space or outside of it, and it kind of harkens back to the one of the main themes of gaming is that it's just kind of a very slow evolving or slow growing, not slow growing, but slowly adapting industry. And whereas it really does kind of feel like turning, doing a U-turn with a cruise ship sometimes, where these things are put in motion and then they're kind of in motion for a long time and then maybe they kind of stop moving, and they start again and it's very clunky. So I think that's definitely one of the themes that people are going to be highlighting, not just from a gaming perspective, but also you have kind of some of these companies have like investment kind of things to them where people are like, all right, we gotta, unfortunately that's kind of how these things work. We need to start seeing some kind of progress. Why are we not seeing progress? You know what I mean? So I think that's definitely going to be one of the biggest themes of the industry, continue to be one of the biggest themes in the industry moving forward. And kind of, I feel like the tone of it has kind of shifted from like bright and shiny to kind of show me something type of thing. At least from that's just my perspective, having done a lot of these stories in the past. One thing that you touched on that I wanted to hear more about that I haven't been able to talk to you about since is the rollout in Africa. So you guys announced the GSA Africa initiative. When was that? Was it about a year ago now, or maybe a little bit
It
less?
was almost it was in February of this year
Okay.
we announced it,
How has that gone?
and it's it's been a little slow. It's been a little
Sure.
slow. The different bureaucracies, different governments, different bureaucracies, different requirements. We have a managing director on the ground in Lagos, Nigeria. Working diligently to get things moving. We had some issues with getting our name approved, GSA Africa, which was a little confusing to me, but their comment was, well, this is an association in Lagos in Nigeria, and you're claiming it is Africa, and Africa is a very big continent. And we explained that we have a GSA Europe, and and we have a GSA Japan, and Japan is all right, kind of small, but Europe is kind of big, and it's just a name, and we're going to be dealing with regulatory authorities across of Africa, where regulated gaming is a exists. A lot of different we've talked to a lot of different regulatory authorities. I participated in the first African Gaming Expo, AGE, that was held also in Lagos, and I was incredibly heartened to hear from so many different regulatory authorities that said they were either already or planning to implement IGSA standards within the regulations and using the technology as they grew their gaming economy in those different jurisdictions. It's fascinating to me that newer jurisdictions sometimes can leapfrog, long established jurisdictions simply because they've got very little and they can implement new technologies as opposed to, a jurisdiction that has implemented older technology, and to just go through the replacement cycle is just so, much of a slog. I mean, it'll take so long. So GSA Africa is still going on. We've got approval for the name. We've got an office. We're getting ready to do a launch. I would not at this point. There's a few other legal things that we need to do, and given how things move, I wish I had the crystal ball, but I don't. So I won't try to prognosticate as to when the office will be officially open, but we're still working on it. And the other reason why we did that, to be very candid, is as we went down to South Africa, we talked to different regulators there, and then we were introduced to Northern African regulators and Central African regulators. We heard the same thing over and over again: technology, technology, technology. We don't understand this. We don't know how to handle this. There's all the stuff that we want to do, but we talked to European regulators and they're inundated. We don't want to do the same thing. We want to make sure we're ready from the get-go. How do we do that? And we realize there's a huge opportunity here to partner with these regulators and to help them, through education, through standards, through understanding their unique requirements, because they do have some unique requirements, even though it's the same gaming as, everywhere else. That there's always some unique twist from a legislative and cultural perspective. So we wanted to understand that, and that was again sort of the impetus behind creating GSA Africa. I will tell you that we've tried to make forays into Latin America. Brazil is a huge gaming market. Peru, Chile, Colombia. I mean, you can just keep going on and on. There's a lot of opportunities in South America and Latin America as well. I'm not going to tell you that we're going to do this tomorrow, but at some point in time, we probably will also start to focus more on Latin America. And I had a great opportunity to meet and talk to a number of regulatory authorities from that area while at a CGS conference in Santiago, and it was more of the same. It's the same issue, in just a different geographical location. Touching on technology for one more thing, I mentioned, or I might have not mentioned, but cyber resiliency, cyber risk, cyber security. These are things that have become pretty important, quite topical in the news, and not for a good reason. We created a cyber resiliency committee, not to create standards around technology, but again, sort of with a vision of and a focus on the regulators. As regulators, what is it that you should require of suppliers and operators in the area of cyber resiliency and cyber risk? What should you be aware of? And then as we talk to CISOs from different operators, individuals who are dealing with risk insurance and premiums that are skyrocketing because the bad guys are continuing to talk to each other and, figuring out where to exploit and how to exploit. And the good guys, for a variety of reasons, tend to hold a little bit back, although that's changing. So we decided to create this committee again to create best practices, working with the industry, working with some pretty prominent law enforcement agencies whose letters I'm not allowed to speak, to really understand what we can do to help the operators potentially reduce their risk insurance premiums, and also tell regulators this is what you ought to require of the ecosystem that is gaming. Because really, cyber resiliency in the gaming industry is not just about networks and applications. It's about chips, it's about PCBs, it's about gaming devices, it's about all of the bits and pieces that drive gaming. And then when you talk about, online, you've got servers, you've got data centers. So we've got big data center companies like AWS, Continent 8, that are involved in this committee, that are sharing their experiences. And we're trying to figure out, how to create best practices that hopefully we can take to the not just the industry, but to also the insurance companies and say there is no silver bullet against this. We are doing everything that we can. Please understand, we are doing everything that we can. If there's anything new that we can do, we will do that. And to that end, we're also collaborating with the retail and hospitality ISAC. ISAC stands for Information Sharing Analysis Center. The retail and hospitality ISAC is comprised of huge companies like Target, like Home Depot, McDonald's, MGM. There's a wide variety of companies, both from the retail and the hospitality side. And we're hosting, we're co-hosting an event on Thursday of G2E, to bring everybody together to talk about some of the things that we're seeing and some of the things that we're doing in the Cyber Resiliency Committee. Again, this is not traditionally a gaming technology thing. It's more of a broader technology, but it impacts gaming. It impacts gaming not just from an operational perspective, but also from a supplier perspective and from an industry image perspective. So because it's technology, we want to get involved and we want to understand what can we do to help promote the industry and promote best practices to try and, to the extent that we can, mitigate these issues from occurring.
Definitely. And you touched on G2E, which I do want to hold on to for just, I want to get back to that. But I will say that I think with the discussion of cyber, the cybersecurity part of it, I think it's another illustration kind of, to me at least, it kind of illustrates your guys's kind of versatility, like we said, with this technology. And it goes just beyond, slot machines and table games, and really touches on every aspect of the industry. Because as we've seen, if gaming is to kind of continue on the path that it wants to continue in terms of digital expansion, cashless payments, et cetera, online gaming, metaverse gaming, as it were, in order for these things to kind of develop as stakeholders wish they would. I know this past summer, was very interesting from a legislative perspective, or lack of progress. I think it's indicative of the need for a group such as your guys to kind of take control of that whole kind of sector, and not just the pure gaming part of it, because as we see it, it expands beyond that, if the industry is going to evolve. So moving on to G2E, and let me actually pause for just one. Okay, so we stopped off at G2E. Obviously, you can't really, this time of year, you can't really have any conversation or any kind of anything without kind of alluding to G2E in some form. So I believe, obviously, you mentioned you guys will be having the cybersecurity talk there. What else kind of don't you guys hold your annual meeting at G2E as well, if I'm not mistaken? So could you kind of tell us
We
about that and what you guys have planned?
yeah, and actually, this is very interesting because of the words that you just used. So I just had a very interesting conversation with some members of Reed Exhibitions. And I was explaining that there's a lot of things that happen during G2E, which we all refer to as at G2E, but have nothing to do with G2E. And it's sort of a shame that, we shamelessly use G2E when, it's not really a G2E sanctioned or affiliated event. So yes, at G2E, we are going to have the Retail and Hospitality ISAC meeting. It will be held at the Wynn. That will be on Thursday. And then on Wednesday evening, you're absolutely correct. Again, during G2E, but nothing to do with G2E, we host our annual meeting. And this is an opportunity for us to bring together our representatives from different member companies who are traveling to Las Vegas from all over, the world, and to bring them in to explain to them, give a little recap of what 2024 was about, and also share with them our strategic objectives for 2025. I'm very lucky that I have a really great board of directors. They're extraordinarily supportive. They're very supportive, really focusing on technology as a whole. And I think as we've had this conversation about AI, about cyber, and you mentioned metaverse, I'll get to that as well. There's a lot of different technologies that we're looking at, and one of the things that sort of ties some of these threads together is we've got a responsible gaming committee. Now, when we created the responsible gaming committee, quite frankly, it was, oh boy, here we go. Another group of people are going to start talking about responsible gaming, safer gaming, whatever terminology you want to call that, whatever label you want to, assign to it. And it's going to be more of the same. And I tried to say, hey guys, how about we attack this from a different perspective? How about we attack this from a technology perspective? So there's lots and lots of academics that have done tons and tons of research, right? There's lots of data out there. We know that this is a real problem. We know it affects a certain percentage of the population. Whatever, you can debate the percentage, but it doesn't really matter. It affects a certain percentage of the population. We as an industry ought to take action on this. We ought to be responsible. We ought to take matters into our own hands. We should not leave it up to regulators or, God forbid, legislators to tell us what to do, right? And we should do the right thing because, quite frankly, we want gaming to be a healthy, and wholesome, and sustainable entertainment experience. We don't want, people who can't afford to gamble to be gambling. We don't want people to go down a self-harming path. We don't want any of that, right? So why don't we look at technology and how technology could be brought to bear in terms of delivering better, safer gaming results? And we started looking at AI. Just seems to make sense. There's so many companies out there investing hundreds of thousands of dollars or pounds or whatever currency in developing AI-based tools. But one of the biggest issues, and I've had this conversation with many different people, regulators and suppliers and operators, is all of these systems that are being developed, right, are sort of a microcosm. Because if you're the biggest operator in the world and you develop the best safer gaming application in the world with the best AI algorithm in the world, you can only apply it to your customers. And you can only apply it to the data that you have of your customers transacting at your sites. You've got no clue what they're doing at the other casinos. And as we all know, back in the old days, in land-based, when you'd walk down the strip and everybody had a bungee cord with 15 different, player loyalty cards, we used to argue when I was at Harrah's Entertainment, that's my customer. Yeah, is it really my customer? Is it my customer that I'm sharing with MGM and Wynn and Mirage and blah, blah, blah? It's like, whose customer are they, right? So we know that players in a land-based environment play multiple venues. You can imagine in online how much easier it is, although again, there's the onboarding process and the payment, KYC, and all that stuff that's a little difficult, but it's a lot easier to play multiple sites online. So we started focusing on technology, and we created a system, a specification, I shouldn't call it a system, a specification for a centralized limits system that anonymizes players and also anonymizes operators. So information is collected centrally. Players create a central limits set of values, much like self-exclusion is centralized, right? And now when you log on to an online casino, when you go to a land-based casino, when you transact, it downloads your limits from the system. It knows what you've got left as balances for the various different types of limits. And after you've played a while, if you exceed one of them, whatever needs to happen happens, whether it's an SMS, whether it's a text, an email, whether it's, a timeout, whatever it happens to be. But when you're done playing, your balance is updated centrally so that if you go to a different casino or you log on to a different site, it downloads your current balance and it doesn't allow you as a player to set unrealistic levels across multiple different online or land-based casinos. It tries to really give a tool to players to manage their gaming experience. Again, it has nothing to do with communication protocols. It's using technology. It's using, technologies such as what Google uses in terms of dealing with hundreds of thousands of millions of transactions and in a very fast, manner. But it's not really traditional gaming technology. But again, it's sort of like in that realm of how do we look at technology within the gaming industry and see how it applies. And if you allow me, I'll touch on Metaverse since you brought it up, and then I'll hand it over back to you. But I was having a conversation with the CEO of a company, and he said to me, what really keeps me up at night is worrying about the new technologies that are coming up. He said, these are technologies that, quite frankly, are already here. They might be nascent to the industry, but they're already, pretty, to some degree, pervasive outside of the gaming industry. And I worry about how we're going to bring them in, how we're going to have them tested, how we're going to get them approved, how regulators are going to view this technology, how legislators are going to view this technology. We should be thinking about this future technology. And that sort of resonated with me. And I said, you know what? We have not had an in-person IGSA technical summit since we got sort of disrupted by COVID. So in 2024, in November, November 12th and 13th, to be specific, in Phoenix, Arizona, where it'll be nice and warm, at the Action Hotel Resort, which is one of the properties I opened when I was at Harrah's. So it's sort of going home experience. Although it's changed tremendously. At 12th and 13th, we are going to hold a technology summit, and it is really going to be focused on future technology. It's going to be focused on metaverse casinos. It's going to be focused on VR, AR, XR, and land-based and online. It's going to be talking about crypto because crypto is becoming more and more mainstream. It's still not there yet, but there's more and more sort of, steps towards it becoming mainstream. Should we be thinking about how are we going to handle it in a real way? We're going to be talking, of course, about AI, because even though AI is here, it is evolving so rapidly that what we knew yesterday is completely different than what's going to happen today and tomorrow. So we're going to talk about that. And you really can't talk about future tech without wrapping it up in cyber resiliency. How are you going to protect all of the stack? Because if you don't, hackers are going to be looking for exploits throughout this. So this technology summit, it's all about education. It's 2 days. Hopefully we've got great speakers. We've got IBM, we've got Intel, we've got AWS, we've got a number of different gaming companies, we've got regulators going to be there. Hopefully it'll be a very interesting and educational experience. So to all your readers and listeners, I would encourage them to go to our site and take a look at it, and hopefully we'll see you there. So It's a bit of a shameless plug, but hey, we're a nonprofit, so I guess thank you for the opportunity, and I'll hand it back over to you.
All right, so that sounds very amazing. You touched on basically, I mean, we've just over the last 40 minutes, we've just basically brushed on every topic that's of interest in terms of a technology side for the industry. And it sounds like it's all going to be wrapped up into one great package in Arizona in November, which, you know, for someone like myself who was growing up in a cold climate, that sounds pretty appealing no matter what the topic is, let alone these interesting things going on. One thing I want to ask you about. And I don't want to, you know, obviously we want people to, you know, to be interested. We want people to go. We want people to experience these things. So I won't ask you too much about the specifics because again, I want people to go. But I think the thing that I'm interested in, or the thing that I would ask you is like, what would your hope be for people who are coming back from that conference or going back to their companies or their properties or wherever they may come from? What do you hope that they take away? What kind of insights do you think, maybe not specific to one thing, but overall, what do you want people to be thinking about when they leave the summit in November?
I think that there's a number of things that I would want them to really think about and to go back and pursue. Number one is technology is something that is always going to exist. Its innovation is going to continue. You can't put your head in the sand and say, I'm not going to get involved in this, because if you don't, you're just going to get passed by. So understanding these technologies, understanding how they're being used outside of our industry, how they're being managed and regulated outside of our industry, and how we can learn from that is very important. So we don't ban these new innovations from our industry, where we're all about entertainment. And as I, you know, I've seen a metaverse casino, and it was beyond entertaining. So really what I would hope is for the regulators to start thinking about, how do I learn about this technology? What do I need to know about this technology? Are my regulations broad enough to handle this technology? If not, what do I need to do, and what is the impact on the legislative process if I need to change regulations? And who can help me craft those regulations? Who can help me understand this technology? And more importantly, as we discussed with AI and AI algorithms, do you really need to understand all the technology, or do you really have to understand enough about how it can be used to build those guardrails on how it should be implemented within the industry? And then lastly, for companies that are in the innovative space, that are developing these technologies, we are creating an emerging technologies committee. It is going to be chaired by Travis Foley, who, if you recall, ran the Nevada lab for many, many years. Now he is head of government affairs for BMM. He's had a humongous career, has been involved in technology for a very, very long time. Very excited to have him act as chair for this committee. And we are going to start thinking about, are there standards? Are there best practices? What do we need to do to help regulators understand this technology? Because whether we want to or not, it will be coming to our industry.
Definitely. Well, Mark, this has been great. Like I said, I always love catching up with the IGSA because to me, it represents kind of the forefront of the industry. Like the things that you guys are worried about are typically the things that I should be worried about. And so too, as everyone else that is tangentially involved with the industry. Thank you so much again for your time. Hope you have a great, hope you can, you know, maybe get some rest, get some R&R before the, you know, G2E and then obviously the technical summit in November and then ICE right after that in January, late January this year. So a lot coming up for all of us, but again, pretty much anything that is crucial to the industry on the technology and innovation side can usually be found, or usually you guys have already covered it or discussed it or have some kind of material on it already. That's kind of how you guys work. So thank you again for joining us and enlightening us on all things IGSA. Tell everybody who might be interested kind of where they can find you, where they can find, you know, IGSA things, if they want to sign up for the technical summit, et cetera, where can they find it?
Our website is very easy. It's igsa.org, www, of course. So just go there. The link for the technical summit landing page is there. Anything that we do and the ability to contact us is available on that website. So please fire off emails and be happy to have a conversation.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the GGB Podcast. To hear more about Mark, the IGSA, and all the important issues in gaming, visit ggbmagazine.com. To hear more about all the weekly news in gaming, visit ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.